So what shall we look at this evening? This is Margaret.
Margaret.
Hi. Well, I wanted to call in tonight because a big part of me is confused about, is in a confusion process and does not want to be on the call. And so I've seen a fair amount about this process, and it feels like it's related to the biggest thing about it is it's like it's because or it happens when I don't know something, and there's a panic to that, to not knowing, that then basically I get pulled up into my head, and it's clear that there's something wrong that I don't know. It's a process sort of like that, and I've seen that happen to me in the past, and it stands out in very familiar instances that I haven't process mapped those exactly, but I did one recently. And I'm really grateful for the for just guiding us through that in the musings link, the link that was in the musings article, because it's so clear that conditioning does not want me to have that information to get to the bottom of it with ego, to be able to, I guess, to Yeah, I mean, I just could see so much in hearing the instructions for doing that process, and how that would help.
Right, exactly. So it sounds as if you're very clear that the process of confusion around which there's panic is a conditioned process, and indicates to you that the attention is on conditioned mind. I mean, we've said it many times, right, in many ways, Margaret, where if you're confused, that means we're looking to different conditioned mind for answers. So it's a very familiar process. And the process mapping has assisted you to break down the components of the process, I'm hearing, so that you understand and can recognize, I mean, you can bring awareness to it and recognize that you're in the process.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's what the mapping helps us is exactly the awareness you came to, which is this is familiar. I would call it confusion. I tend to have that reaction when I don't know something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it sounds like the next step in the process is that somehow or the other there's a piece of that which is not yet recognized as part of the process that you've got to get to the bottom of it somehow.
Yes, and I think I just saw that it's not, I mean, I'm perfectly fine not knowing lots of things about much of life, and I recognize that's a joy in life for me too. It's when I'm put on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
To know something, and from having been made to be wrong when this process, started, I guess.
Well, that's very interesting, right, Margaret? So it's a very specific case that the reason to look at that specific case is because you're suffering over it, right? So when you're put on the spot, you can feel the suffering. And there's the desire to drop that and then suffering. So perhaps one way of doing that is to map that instance if you haven't already mapped it before. Or if it's really, really familiar to you, to practice redirecting the attention at that moment into there's nothing wrong, or excuse yourself, or there's so many ways in which we could train with that, right? So, for example, we could train with somebody puts me on the spot and expects me to know, and I sit with all of those sensations and just practice. You put this on your recorder and listen to it over and over again to say, sorry, I actually don't know the answer, so let me get back to you. Right?
Yeah.
Which allows the person, allows Margaret to exit a suffering situation in which the voices are coming at her and making her feel ill-equipped to answer the question. And so you don't attempt to, you just excuse yourself and say, actually, you know, I don't actually know, so how about I sit with that and get back to you?
It sounds so so obvious when you say
that. Yeah. Well, it does, right? Because it does, because you're disidentified in that moment, because the worldview of the person stuck in the process is, I have to know the answer. I don't know the answer. Oh, my God, what am I going to do? I can't say something wrong. It's wrong. I mean, all of that barrage or whatever is the conditioned conversation produces that reaction of, I don't know what word you would use, overwhelm or paralysis, or feeling like you're 3 years old again and have been pulled up to something that you should know but you don't know kind of place. And so, you know, it's like, okay, well, I don't think there's anything wrong. I'm perfectly fine not knowing the answer. So in this moment, I'm just going to say, you know what? I'm sorry, I actually don't know the answer to the question you're asking me in this moment. Let me think about it, or let me sit with it and get back to you.
Right. Yeah.
And we can practice that, right? I mean, I can look, I've done that on many occasions where I've listened to it on the recorder over and over again. So as a handle, it's available to me. And then the next time I go into that situation, it's a workshop. Can I bring it back? What do I do? Just bring presence to it and watch whether it's possible for you to retrieve that handle in awareness. So be present enough to recognize the process you're in and use the thing that will assist that person not to be stuck in the suffering.
Right, right. And the more I listen to what you're offering, the more it feels like this is just ego torturing me, because it's like a sore spot. It's a sore, you know, it's...
Of course, absolutely. It is ego torturing you. I mean, there's no question about that.
Yes, but I mean, it's so strange to me to... It's so clear what you're expressing, and that I've already sort of practiced with approaching this situation that way. And I've had interactions even with my partner recently where he said to me, like, well, you're going to have to make this call, because I can't be that nice to people, or I can't be that where I was just expressing that sort of what you were just saying about not knowing the answer to this, and not needing to know right now, and, you know, that sort of thing. And that, because there was just a lot of clarity there for me, or a lot of presence at the time.
So it's even the practice of that is familiar to you, right?
Yeah. I mean, and I think there's something about this month of giving and just feeling really awkward about, I think it's personal interactions with people, you know, like street people or that sort of thing, that are really awkward for me sometimes. And sometimes scary, and I don't know what to say. It sort of feels like it's a rubber act. Don't know what to say or do. And I'm just sort of stuck.
Right.
And I don't.
So here's the thing, Margaret. I think the principle applies, right? Because if we're looking to conditioned mind, then we're not going to get anywhere. which is why all of these become workshops, right? So here's something to throw. You could record about this and see what would resonate for you. But let's just say, so it sounds like the content is clear. So there are situations where you're put on a spot and asked to know the answer. And one way of practicing with that is to say, okay, well, I actually don't know the answer, which is true, because at that moment I don't, and let me get back to you on that, right? That's present. It's present to what you're experiencing. And so then now there's another situation where with strangers on the street or something like that, you don't know what to say. And so you could practice in those situations instead. You could try so many things. All I'm going to do is take a deep breath and smile. I don't have to say anything. Or I'm going to practice being able to just smile and say, "Oh, are you having a good day?" Where what you want to be available to you is not on the process map. We need to exit the process map to be present enough, to be aware enough for what is arising to say in the moment. Right?
Yeah.
But until you interrupt the process map with something that is available to you through awareness, you're not going to be able to let life speak in that moment. And so to practice with something like an interrupt that says you predetermine what you're going to say. Are you having a good day? Or aren't the cherry blossoms a wonderful shade of pink? Whatever it is.
Thank you for that.
So then you're not in the process of not knowing. You absolutely know what you're going to say. And you've interrupted the process of not knowing and looking to conditioned mind for an answer.
And I guess it also does not feel unkind or
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, unkind to
strangers or to people I don't know. I don't like the word stranger so much, but I was programmed with that word.
So that's part of the process, which is you've got to find something to say that is not judged as unkind. Is that part of the
I guess I get beaten
standard
up for
to
that.
Meet?
If you don't give
of yourself in those situations, that's labeled unkind.
Right.
Mm.
And it's very hard to know what ego would label as unkind.
Explain it to you, right? It can say unkind and we go into paroxysms of suffering.
Yes, right. It's making it up as it goes along.
That's right. Yeah. And it knows that unkind is something that will get to you. And so it can say unkind and it will get to you. Right? We don't stop to go, well, what was unkind about that? Or what do you mean is unkind?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's just so helpful to have those practice tips of how to work with this. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really appreciate that. And all
because,
those great calls. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Right, because there's a content handle here, but the process is a broadly applicable principle, right? I need to interrupt attention on conditioned mind, and train attention to be able to be aware of the process I'm in, and have an exit. It's the same thing as practicing with a mantra.
Hmm. Right.
My mantra in this situation is, how pink are the cherry blossoms today? Yeah.
Okay. That's great.
All right. Thanks, Margaret.
Thank you, Ashwini.
Sequoia?
Yes.
We had a workshop on Sunday, and I had a couple of felt like real powerful insights during the workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was seeing, at least this seems so, that when I'm in the process of doing, there's my, the body is in a process of tension. And
wait, I think there's a little bit of fuzziness on the line. So what I heard you say, Sikor, is when you're in the process of being, the body is in a place of tension?
When I'm in the process of doing.
Oh, doing, of course. Yes, doing. That makes complete sense. I was like, huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I'm in the process of doing, the body is in a place of tension, okay?
Yeah, and I had never seen that before. I had never connected the dots with that. And and so I've been working with it this week, and I have been finding it extremely helpful when I notice the body is tense, I know something is going on. There is a conversation, even if it's under the radar, and I'm not aware of a conversation, I can be assured that there's something happening along those lines. And it has just helped tremendously to notice that and to... and to know that being is not that.
Yeah, and I think there's a particular significance in what you're saying, right? So if doing and tension in the body are related, tension in the body is a signal to your system to know that a conversation is going on, however subliminal or under the radar it is. And to know that that state of body tension with the attention on the conversation is a very different experience than I project what you feel when you're just being. And I being synonymous with the conversation is not there, right?
Exactly. When there's no conversation. And I have really appreciated it because it has circumvented any further conversation about anything.
Right. Yes. Yes. It is so important, right? Because if I'm programmed to do, then noticing that I'm tense then invites how I effort not to be tense. Right? Which is a mental process, not a physical one, right? I'm just reflecting in a different way what you're pointing to, that as soon as I notice I'm in a conversation, the conversation starts about getting out of the conversation.
Yes.
However that happens. And as you pointed out, all of that happens in the mind, and the body just gets tenser and tenser because doing is equivalent to tension.
Yes.
And if you drop the conversation, you can actually relax.
Yes. Yeah, and it, yes, absolutely, and it's, yes, I mean, boy, that place of I'm in a conversation, I've got to stop it, I've got to effort, you know, it's just, I don't know, it just cuts right to the chase, and even though I may not, let's see how to say this, even though, and I don't know whether this is another conversation, even though I may not exactly know what just being feels like in the body, I do know what it's not.
Which means you know what it feels like.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Well, I think that's such a, it's such an interesting, it goes back to what we were talking about with Margaret, right? The mental process wants to have a mental experience of being, which is impossible. Right?
Yeah.
You can't know with the mind what it's like to be because the mind is not being. And so the narrative of the mind is, I don't know what the process, I might not know what the process of being looks like, but I do know what it's not like this.
Yeah.
Which sort of, in a sense, you intuit, you know, something, awareness is aware of the process of being. Perhaps conditioned mind doesn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad to, yes, absolutely. I see what you're pointing to. I mean, there's just no way I would even register that, you know, the tension and the doing if there wasn't an awareness of a different experience.
Yeah.
Well,
if you look to your experience, you know what the process of being is.
Uh-huh, yes.
And the best way to describe it is not doing, because there's no way of describing the process of being.
Yeah.
You just have to hold up a flower and then everybody nods, right? It's like that.
Yeah.
You know, the Buddha sermon, there are some things that are beyond words. And so that's why, you know, in Buddhism, we almost always describe something as what it's not.
Uh-huh.
Presence is what is not, because what is can be everything and everything in the moment.
Yes, I think that's exactly what was being seen. And, and it was getting filtered through. Well, you don't know what, you don't know what being is, but
So. But you can know it in this way, the way I tell you.
Exactly. So, that was really powerful, and the other thing that happened was. When we were doing the art project, I've seen this a gazillion times, but I never saw it. That it was my life. I was doing this little picture, and I heard, you know, don't dawdle, hurry along. You don't know how long you have to do this picture. Don't mess with the details. Just do the broad strokes. Just get it finished. Da 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 da. And then. I came to the end and I went, oh my God, that's it. That's the whole thing. She, you know, just getting that whole enjoyment of being completely present and taking care of the little details and the joy of that, just being hopped over for, you know, just get to the end, you know. So that has been very helpful this week too.
So in watching how you were doing the exercise, you were aware of that conversation that is accompanying you no matter what you're doing. And it's exactly the opposite of how you want to be, which is attentive and engaged in the details and enjoying what you're doing. And that instead of letting us be, that voice is constantly interrupting your life to say, that's not how you should be. What you need to be doing is blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And that's the story of what's going on for you a lot.
And just see how those two insights are just really tied together, you know.
No wonder you're tense, right? If that's the conversation.
I just saw it all laid out. It's like, oh my God, no wonder there's just that tension all the time. It's in that conscious state of doing, you know, just do the broad strokes, hurry up, get on with it, you know.
Well, and not even the state of doing, right, Sequoia, because if you had that voice constantly talking to you like that, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, then you can feel the pressure.
Yeah.
Right, and no wonder we're tense. Okay, well, I'm just going to try harder and become stiffer and more urgent and less present, and it's not fun.
Yeah. So anyway, it just became abundantly clear. Abundantly clear that suffering. The whole suffering system that was a part and parcel of all of that. So,
yeah,
and just celebrating it and seeing that just seeing it, wow, has just made such a tremendous difference.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, and I would project, because seeing it is the transformation. If you can, as Margaret was talking to us, if you see the process, then you know you're in that process. And so all you, but if you didn't see the process, you won't know that you're in it, right?
Mm,
yeah. The relief of seeing it allows us to make a different choice in the moment rather than just be driven by it.
Absolutely. Yes. That's the celebration right there. That,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay, well, I'm tense. Let me relax.
That's all I have to do right now.
Right. Oh, there's tension. Well, we know it. You know, that's not what's chosen. So we get mm-hmm. to practice something different and just being
right.
present and having fun with
yeah.
the detail and
yeah.
enjoying that. Yeah.
I was hoping you would say that, because the conversation often reveals what we are doing that we should continue doing, right? Because it says you shouldn't do that, right? There's a way of relaxing could be to relax the muscles, but there's a way in which, oh, it's attention to the detail that is joyful. So let me make, if the conditioning is causing me to get distracted and face on broad strokes, what I know I need to do is to get very, very attentive to the thing in front of me.
That is so right on, Ashwini. It is, because that is where the body relaxes, the
mm-hmm.
conversation ends, the joy begins.
Yes.
As everything
yeah.
is just attended to in exquisite detail, and there's a life.
Yeah. Yeah, and
yeah.
we say attention is the highest form of love, right? As soon as you become attentive, as the caring that is coming across in what you're pointing to, we're in love, right? We're exited the process of suffering into the process of attention and engagement, which is loving.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I just wanted to share that was an awesome workshop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Jan?
Jan,
and then who's next? Tim?
Tim,
was
yeah.
that Tim? Okay.
Yeah.
Jan?
Hi. What was just mentioned about what you just said about the attention, you know, attention and love being synonymous, I guess that's part of what I've been seeing in the focus on giving.
Mm-hmm.
The more I look at the giving, at giving and receiving as just sort of being one, Well, I think the way it's said in one of the write-ups is the circle of giving and receiving.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost as though when I go to the places of giving from center, or what we would term giving from center, it doesn't feel like giving. It's just what I'm doing. It's just the next thing. And it made me think of when people who have done very heroic events are interviewed and they say, oh my gosh, how did you have the courage to whatever it is? And they said, it's what anyone would have done. It was just mm-hmm. what needed. And that's been my experience when I go to the joy of giving. It's just the joy of being.
Mm-hmm.
It's just what comes out of being. And so I'm struggling a little bit with the word. The word seems to get in the way.
It does. Well, and I project the reason the word seems to get in the way is because it's defined in a particular way. It's defined to imply separation. And your
yes.
experience of the same process it's pointing to is one of non-separation. As Sherry said this morning, we might need a different word for it, right?
Yes. In fact, that's what the conversation this morning took me right there again, because it's almost like I'm feeling torn back and forth. Okay, we're supposed to look at giving. And then I go to that traditional definition.
Mm-hmm.
The mind goes to that. And it's
mm-hmm.
and I work with it. And, you know. But when I go to that place of presence and the giving that, I guess we can use the same term, the giving that comes of that, it's not like it's a willful giving, an intentional. It's just, it's what happens from presence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's just been
There's
a really
no
interesting
I giving
thing
to you.
Pardon?
There's no I giving to you, right?
No, it's not that way at all, or to anything. It's it's almost like, I don't even know how to put it to words. What was just dropping is, it's almost like an energy movement, you know, that, but from presence, and that's why the giving and the receiving, there's no difference, it feels like, there's no difference between the two. Because when I'm present and I'm doing whatever, well, I was just with family and I thought, you know, I guess it could be termed that I was giving to in various things I was doing, but that wasn't how it felt at all. And in that, whatever I was doing that may appear to be giving, I was receiving. There was no difference in it. And it makes me, you know, the focus, I think, language was in musings was pointed out as being so how it can get in our way or be of assistance. And I guess I'm struggling with that a little bit with the giving and the receiving, that it just feels like the traditional definitions don't seem to be working when I go to the experience.
Right. And that's all we're ever doing, right, Jan? Where we're going past the conditioned way of seeing the world to having an experience of what the word might be pointing at that may not have to match the conditioned definition, right? So the Buddha always said that we talk at different levels. So if, for example, a conditioned definition of a tree brings up an image of a tree, which has got, you know, like a kid draws it with a little trunk and a bunch of curling circular things that represents its canopy. But when you sit in front of a tree and you really see the tree for what all of the components the tree is, when you say tree and you don't go to the conditioned experience of the tree, which is that stick figure driven done by the kid, and you actually go to where the tree where that tree took you to its essential experience, you know, when you say tree, you mean something very, very different. Right?
Yeah.
And we stop living from the essence of the tree when we say tree. We just say tree from the mind. So instead of saying giving from the mind, you're going to a felt direct experience of what giving is to you. So when you say giving, you can say giving from that place and mean what you actually mean about it, rather than a conventional sense of giving, which is conditioned.
Yeah.
So the difference in the language that we begin to use is what our experience of the term is, not what the conditioned notion of the term, idea of it is.
Right. It also puts in stark contrast when conditioned mind comes up with an idea of giving or receiving or what goes with that.
Right.
And I guess that's what I'm starting to really appreciate more and more are those contrasts, you know, as we practice with each of these various processes, giving, receiving, all of it, that it's that contrast that allows me to see the choices. It almost sounds too literal in this, but to make conscious decisions about where my attention is going to be.
Right.
Yeah, it's just been really
helpful. Right. Yes, absolutely. That when you experience the difference in the how of it, right, it's not what but how, the how of it, then that's where the attention is. I'm either in the process of love or I'm in the process of conditioned mind. I know what the difference is, and because I know the difference, I can choose where I put my attention.
Right. Yeah, that just made me smile because it really is. It doesn't matter what if we're looking at receiving, giving. It doesn't matter.
Participating, yes. Control, right?
Right. I forget all that we've done, but it's it it's just so what I just love this year of focusing on processes, because it takes, as we practice and go deeper and deeper in looking, I'm finding that it keeps taking me to that same place, and it doesn't matter mm-hmm. what the focus is, if that makes sense.
It's just yes, absolutely, because in some sense, it's always the same process. Attention is either here or it's not here, right?
Right.
Now, what I get to experience is here's different flavors, right? So I get to experience it in giving, and I get to experience it in receiving, or in participating, or being, or beginning, or whatever else, right? Because at some level, life does have different flavors.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's endlessly fascinating. It'll never get boring.
No, it definitely doesn't. And I also get a chance to see where the sticky points are. And that's,
right.
You know, that can be really fun too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you, Ashwini.
Thanks, Jen. Tim.
This is Tim?
Yeah.
Hi. This has really been great. I've seen my own process in each one of the calls. And one thing you were just talking about with Jan about like having a choice of where to put my attention.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm looking at this, what feels like a gigantic piece of karma, and just kind of marveling at how it feels like I have no choice when I'm stuck in it. I believe you and I want to like be there, but with this particular content karma, it feels so magnetic. Mostly it's around family, that it's like, no, when I'm there, it feels like I have no choice.
No. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure that's true for the person stuck in it, right? Because you're in it. You didn't circumvent. It's like you get on the wheel and the wheel turns, and the wheel's going to turn in the direction it's always been turning, right? There's no consciousness in the place. And it's interesting, Tim, because there's a way in which when we use the word karma, it's so sticky, right? It just feels like a huge, sticky mess of stuff.
Yeah.
So the reason why we do something like a process map or the set of exercises that are around the first couple of days of the year long is to take what the story, if you will, whatever the karma is, and mm-hmm. start to break it apart. Because we don't have a choice at the level of abstraction. We only have a choice in the moment. So I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Give me perhaps a voice that you hear in this karmic process, or even give me a hint of what the karmic process is. So let's break it down.
Oh, yeah. No, and the thing is I've been working on this one. Actually, it was great, like, the first call you had with Margaret, because I have been process mapping this. And so I can tell you about the players in who's saying and the projections. This is around so one of the voices is like, you're not a man because you don't know how to fix things, and real men know how to fix things, like around the house.
Uh-huh. And so let me ask you this. When the karma is up, are you aware of that voice? Have you worked with the process enough to know that you're hearing it?
Well, see, there's these things, right? Like you said, right? It's big, it's sticky, and there's more, it's something that had been kind of played over and over again since I was really, really little. Like I'm the youngest of three boys, and you know, the voice that I was just bringing up is something that my father said, like verbatim. Mm-hmm. Like that's
right.
You know, we don't hire people to do things; we do it ourselves. And if you can't,
right. So that's why we're bringing conscious awareness to the process, right? So you might wake up, become aware in a particular moment of one of the things you put on the stickies in your on your process map, right?
Right.
At that moment of awareness, the choice is not to move to the next sticky. Right? I don't have to perpetuate the process, because if I have sufficient awareness when that in that place where the voice says you're not a man, and the next sticky is, oh God, whatever, blah, blah, then in that moment I have a choice not to do or not to move to the next sticky.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way you interrupt the process.
Yeah. Well, okay, so because something happened this week where, actually a couple of things, it just stuff around the house, like our air conditioning broke down, and then I had this situation where I couldn't shut the water off in the house because it had been a long time, and my older brother lives like a mile away, so I ended up calling him. And that's there. So it's like, it's not a situation I had planned for. Like, it wasn't something that I was like consciously going. It was like life happened. And then the beatings were like, you can't even turn the water off. And like, it's supposed to be, you're supposed to turn the thing 180 degrees, not 90 degrees. It's, you know, it's just this stuff, right? Like, and you,
right. And
you
so
did,
when, go ahead.
No, so you did reflect something early on in this conversation that was helpful, because you said the person that's experiencing it, and I hadn't at that moment. I was like, ah, yes, I believe this is just me, a separate me, going through all this. So that was helpful to hear.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
Anyway,
so again, if that was on your process map, now it is, right? Because you heard that. Heard that those words, you may
right.
not be able to prevent the voice from coming in and saying it to you, but at the moment you're aware that self-hate is operating, we absolutely have the ability to redirect the attention. And you may not do it the first time, you may not do it the second time, you may not do it the thousandth time. But the choice happens as soon as I become aware of the self-hate. Then I mean, that's why we do something like, when the voices say X, what I know, they lie. What I know to be the truth is Z, right? I listen to that recording a couple of times, and if when the voice says, you can't even turn off the water, you can't remember it to be 180 degrees, the truth is that's a self-hating voice, and I want to turn my attention to my breath. Or unconditional love, or I'm not listening to you, or whatever it is. And you interrupt the circuit. And if you keep doing that, if you keep having the mantra, whatever the handle is, every time the self-hating voice comes in, eventually you would have interrupted the circuit that whatever the next sticky is won't happen.
Yeah, I can see how there is a need for like a mantra or something in there to interrupt, because thank you, because what's happening is I just kind of saw something else, you know, self-hate. I don't know if this is a useful metaphor, but one time I was in the ocean and I got caught in what's called a set of waves, meaning you get hit by a wave, you get dragged under, you come up just in time for the other wave to hit you, drag it. But that's what my conditioning feels like to me, is like, boom, phrase, you're underwater, and you come back up, boom, and it drags you down kind of again with a bunch of different things. And, you know, one of them in alignment with this is the old chestnut of, you've been practicing a long time. I would just rather avoid this karma, like never invite my brother over to help me fix anything again, and just not feel those feelings. You know,
right.
But I can see that as like another wave kind of.
Yes,
there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, yeah, because then you're never going to, you know, you never get support.
Right.
It becomes believable that a man is someone who's able to fix anything. Right. I mean,
right.
This is the most ludicrous definition of anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? We don't get to go, how absurd is that?
Right. Yeah, I mean, there. I feel like there's a piece. I mean, I know that. I know that it's absurd on one level, and then there's that super little toddler-aged me who's kind of tugging on his dad's pant leg, you know, trying to figure out what's going on in the world. And
you know, Tim, the important thing is you're not that person.
Yeah. Okay.
You're not 3 years old tugging on your father's pant leg in that moment. That's the story. That's the wave. But you're a supremely adequate human being who can ask his brother for support. That's not your dad, right? What it hooks us into is, oh, my God, that little child is real and is having that experience in this moment. Actually, no. That's the story that's happening in conditioned mind, but you're there. You've just asked your brother for help, and the problem is being solved in the best way possible, right? I can't do it. Someone else can do it. I'm going to ask their assistance to do that, and it's done. And if you look at it from that place of presence, nothing in the universe is done without somebody else's assistance. It's all interconnected.
Yeah.
That's the real experience.
Yeah. Well, when you reflect it, that story sounds so much better than when it's told by my conditioning, you know.
Absolutely. Always.
Yeah. No, for sure, because it's like watching a movie where if you change the soundtrack, like it could be a horror film or it could be a comedy or it could be, you know, it's like
the
same
sort of. And
that's
the choice you have, is the soundtrack.
Yeah.
That's what the mantra is, right? I'm interrupting this thing about, bringing something from the past that's not relevant to the moment and just being devastated by an experience that's not happening.
Uh-huh. Yeah, see, you know, it really felt like it was happening.
Well, it was because the attention was on the movie where the soundtrack is a horror film.
Yeah, I can kind of grasp that now. That's really helpful.
So the training then becomes, as the practitioner is, the only thing I can do in that moment is to interrupt the sound. It's to be sufficiently present to at least interrupt the soundtrack.
Right. So if I hear what you're saying, when I was talking at the beginning of this call about having a choice, it's critical to sort of not be watching that movie. Like, not watching the movie gives me the space to have that choice, right?
Well, yes, but it's absolutely right. If we could be present in every moment, then the soundtrack would never have a chance to flip to horror, right? But what happens is something like happened over the weekend where the water just basically goes off and you're trying to get it turned off, and conditioning gets a hold of you and you're identified, right?
Yeah.
At that point, the choice is not don't play, listen for the soundtrack. The horror film has, somebody's already switched on the projector and the wheel and it's in full bore, right? At that point, whenever you come to, at the moment that you're aware of the self-hate, which it sounds like you're not aware of until it's over, that's when you interrupt the soundtrack. And if you keep doing the process map, you're going to wake up sooner and sooner in the process. So you may wake up before the self-hate hits to, oh, God, thank God it's over. Whatever the sticky before self-hate is, now you can interrupt the soundtrack there, right? And then you keep being able to be more and more aware in the process, wake up earlier and earlier and interrupt whatever the soundtrack is there. So you're not having the full bore experience. Right now you wake up at the self-hate part, and there's a chance to interrupt the soundtrack. Next time you might wake up two stickies before the self-hate starts. And
yeah, yeah.
Right there. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's really helpful because, yeah. Yeah, because waking up kind of when it's like blacking out and like, how did I get here? I'm just suffering.
Right.
I don't, you know, it's like I forgot that I had tools or forgot that there was, you know, any sort of choice
right.
in the matter.
Well, and you want to make sure that all of those are on your sticky because that's the conversation of self-hate. That's the ellipse that you use, the short form of that is you've been practicing for so long. How come you still get caught, right? That's the conversation. You've got all these tools. You don't use them. You've forgotten. How did you get here? Kind of the self-hate. So the ability to recognize that I'm in that part of my process map, it doesn't end when the water gets shut off and you're told you're not a man and you should be. It's also, wow, you're supposed to be a practitioner and you still forgot your tools.
For sure. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's what I mean by, the space, the familiar space that it ends up in is hopelessness. It's like, well, it's just hopeless. You'll just never, you know, you're this age and you haven't learned by now, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, that's, I have a few more things to add to the sticky notes. I can see.
Right, exactly. And then practice, right? It's, again, the handle of the cherry blossoms are pink. When I hear those voices, what is it that I automatically want, not automatically, but consciously want to turn my attention to? What's the place that I want to keep my attention on? So that the soundtrack is the soundtrack I want to be listening to, which is the soundtrack of presence and not the soundtrack of self-hate. I don't want this to turn into a horror film.
Yeah. So,
but if I don't know what the soundtrack is, I'm not going to be able to turn my attention to it.
Oh, yes. So if I have a mechanism that I can... That's kind of a prompt to get me to focus on something that I'm choosing. It really sounds like developing that as a habit, like a habit of.
Yes.
And
a habit
you know,
that is conscious, not a habit that's unconscious. Right?
No, right. Yeah. Right. Well, and that's just it. I can see. Another just part of the process kind of dropped in is how habitual this is. Like when this conversation happens, when this set of stimulus happens, I just go into that story. And that's an unconscious habit.
Right.
Precisely.
Right?
So,
and one way of doing it is picking up the recorder and talking about what actually happened. Oh, the water broke. I was unable to fix it. So I just, what really happened is I made a phone call and my wonderful brother came over and fixed it. Wow.
Yeah.
How successful is that? Yeah.
Right. And just,
that's really how it happened.
Yeah. It reminds me of kind of a trick to, that was mentioned about getting present, like literally talking about everything that is happening. Like I'm in my room. I see the nightstand. The curtains are, you know, like calling out everything.
That's right.
That I
That
I see.
Because your attention would have to come here in the room to be present, to be able to do that, which means that it's not on the story.
Right. Yeah. And so when you say, you know, it's just pointing out what happened, like recording what reality is and not what the story is. Yeah. Well, thank you. That's very helpful.
Thank you.
Okay. Gesho.
Gesho.
Penny?
Penny.
It's so interesting, this conversation. And I, for the topic of giving, the process of giving, when I was looking at the invitation was to look at really where conditioning interferes with that or takes charge of that. And where it really works for me is around time. sense of there's not enough time. So if I'm, you know, the opportunity or some invitation arises to give time to something, that where the ego process will enter in is that, well, there isn't enough time. So it's been so interesting to look at that. And the two places I see the two bad choices are, first of all, the notion that there literally is not somehow objectively enough time. Like time is a quantity and there isn't enough of it, which is a hopeless place. Or there is enough time, but I don't make good use of it. And so it's another hopeless place.
And, yeah, because there are two bad choices, right? There's a finite quantity, or the finite quantity is not being used well by you.
Right, right. Yeah. And so what's been so interesting, really, in this process is just the notion that there is such a thing as not enough time, because there's just whatever time there is, you know?
There's this whole fiction
about it's some sort of a something in parentheses that is a thing that I need to divvy up. It's kind of bizarre.
It is. And only happen. I mean, it points to the extent of separation there is from life, right? Because in the moment, there's only now. You have to step out of it to somehow parse it into units and consider it as an objective quantity that there isn't enough of.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And so it's also a place of deprivation, of course. So I heard this story a while ago, and it's been so helpful in this looking at time. And this person was telling a story of a heart surgeon who was teaching a group of students as he was performing this operation. And she said, when you finish this surgery, you have 60 seconds to sew up this artery. And if you don't sew it up in 60 seconds, the patient will die. And she said, and so you need to learn to take your time. And that, I just love that. And really, I mean, the way I translate that is you learn to be present, you know.
Yeah.
You learn to be here rather than chasing a clock. And and so I have found in looking at time, and when I get into this, I don't have enough time, there isn't enough time, to just remember that story about all there is the time, there is this instant, and just to be here, then there's no commentary about time, and time actually ceases to exist.
Oh, yes, yes. That is sort of what the story is pointing to. As long as I'm in a conversation about, oh my gosh, I've only 60 minutes to sew up this artery, then I actually am not present and being able to be in the moment, which is the only way I'm going to be able to presence, right? That's exactly what you're pointing to. That if I'm here, I'm going to get the job done. If I'm not here, I probably am not.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
All the attention has to be in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mentioned this in email class, but I had this interesting experience with time. I was looking in the email class about the issue of impatience, the process of impatience, and I had this experience where I was working on a piece of furniture and I was sanding. Mm-hmm. And so the commentary when I sand is I hate sanding. And and I found that there were, to do this, these pieces of furniture, there's so many strokes of sanding that would work. And I was aware that if I was thinking about, you know, say there's 20 strokes, if I'm on number 10, I'm only halfway there. If that's what's going on, it's just awful. But if when I'm doing number 10, that's all there is in the world, is number 10.
Mm-hmm.
It was not a problem at all. It was just easy.
Yeah.
So again, it's sort of like learning to take your time, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, if you measure anything, then it's impatience, or it's, oh my God, I've got 10 more to go, because it's always a question of how am I going to get the end of it.
Right. Right. Yes, rather than being where I am in it, wherever that is. And this, I was just so struck by the ease that arose when I could go to number 10, that's all that's going on right now.
Yeah, yeah, this is the only moment, this is the only breath, this is the only stroke. And not even saying that, right, Penny? It's so present that it's just all that is there. I'm not conscious of the mental operation of parsing.
Right. And since you say that, as you reflect that, I'm also aware of how when I get there, then the ego commentary comes in about how that's where I am.
Right.
And just to let that play itself out and be on another channel.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, back to this stroke.
Right. Thank you, Ashwini.
Thanks, Penny.
Phil?
This is Michael.
Phil and then Michael.
This has been a great conversation, these conversations. And what I've been looking at is that there are, in this last week particularly, but they're still happening in this week, four large things that, large content, that conditioning would like to say something's wrong about. And which was interesting, I think we kind of had a conversation similar to this because those four things started a while back, that that if I step back into the, you know, the bigger picture, or I guess you say to process, I absolutely can see there's nothing wrong. There's just these things happening in life, you know, in my world right now. And what is interesting is, so I've been, with each thing, just having to do, keep my focus with life, you know what I mean, keep the voices from yammering as much as possible, or to, you know, just move the attention so I don't pay attention to their yammering, let's put it that way, I guess, and just take one step at a time. You know, I mean, what's the thing to do now? What's the thing to do now about whatever the situations are?
Mm-hmm. Right. So what I hear you saying, right, Phil, that there's a way in which the voices are what's making the situation wrong. And so if you step out of the world of ego, where there's right and wrong and good and bad and it should be and it isn't and it shouldn't be and it is and whatever it is that's going on from the voices, then you get to a process place of everything is fine. And the way to stay in everything is in life, right? I mean, it's happening in life, so it can't be wrong. In that level of context, right? And then just as Penny was talking about, just stay here for what's now, then there's no way that a story is allowed to build, right? You don't leave now for whatever is in the past to be dragged into the moment, and whatever is the future to be dragged into the moment. We just stay here for what's now. Whatever is in what's, and that perspective of what's now allows us to stay in the context of there's nothing wrong.
Yeah, and I think actually when you were saying that, I think, you know, the let's put it, the world scene, you know, what's going on in current events, has actually helped that practice, because, you know, everything looks wrong when you look out there.
Well,
and,
I mean, I don't know if you've noticed, Phil, but the only reports we get about what's wrong. No one's reporting about, I said, the only reporting we have is what's not working. Because news is not about what is working.
Exactly.
Right? So, no one is reporting all the Phil actually was kind to her neighbor yesterday, or, you know, someone stopped and offer some flowers to somebody down the street. And just imagine if every act of kindness and every act of compassion and every act of generosity was also reported.
Right. It would be a whole different, probably, world, because everyone's reacting to what we're, you know, reading about as far as it being wrong. So we're,
right.
we can, if we're
yeah,
not careful,
so
live in that
correct.
World. Yeah.
Exactly.
So,
the world is being created by what's being reported as wrong. Now, that's fine, because that's the only source of information we have. And we do get, you know, energetically get reactive to that, which is
yes.
why we have to go to the place you're pointing to, which is in the most spiritual context that I can get to. I can't be dragged into a place of something wrong. I don't want to live there.
Yeah, and then so in seeing that and practicing that exact same thing as you said with that, which has been going on for forever, I guess you could say, but
mm-hmm.
You know, my attention has been more on the news in the past, what, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, 6 months. So in these four pieces of content or whatever that's going on, you know, closer to home, I'm able to use that same practice process with these things, which is,
mm-hmm.
You know, go to look at the bigger picture. There's more to this than just meets the eye, and not engage the voices. And when I do get, I won't even say hooked, but when the emotions get riled in some way, because, you know, to condition the conditioning, some of this stuff really looks wrong, then just to accept that, just to keep accepting whatever comes into the moment. And I find that mm-hmm. that really helps. Like, sometimes at night, I don't think about anything, but my mind is racing. There's, you know, I'm not thinking. Isn't that amazing? And the mind is racing. And just to mm-hmm. Accept that, I can lie there still and breathing, and it's kind of like a meditation, and that's all I can
yes.
do at that point. It's fine.
Yes. Yes. Well, and I love that, right? It's what you're pointing to, right, Phil, because there's so much there's a subtle way in which redirection of attention can be used as avoidance by ego, right? The conditioned
mm-hmm.
process of not listening to the voices can mean avoiding that or not
mm-hmm.
wanting that experience. But if we bring into acceptance everything that's going on, the only way acceptance is possible is if I am in awareness.
Yes, exactly. And anything
in awareness uh-huh. is presence.
Yeah.
Whatever
yeah.
it is. You know, I'm aware that yeah. there's a lot of anger here is a very different statement than I'm angry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I know what the piece of conditioning is that creates some of this, and that's because that the conditioning is I can't rest, this conditioned part, ego, whoever it is, person, it's a personality, whoever you want to call it, can't rest until the thing this that it perceives as wrong is fixed.
Mm.
And I know that.
Yeah.
And so I just have to in a sense, you know, you want to say live with it, but know that that part is going to feel out of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
And I just can't give it that kind of attention. And meanwhile, I'm doing what's next, what's now, be a part of the solution rather than be a part of the problem. In other words, work towards, say, the solution without having it be a problem.
Mm-hmm. Or as from the perspective of an awareness practitioner, ending suffering.
Yeah, or
by
ending
not
suffering.
Giving attention
exactly.
to the circuit that causes suffering, right?
Exactly. And meanwhile, like, let's see, one out of the three, out of the four, has resolved, it seems, with just doing the next now, and it's been a lot big process, but a great process, because it's been the practice of not suffering over it, not letting that part that needs it fixed this moment, you know, this very minute, and just keep doing the next thing or the thing now. And then I see the another one resolving itself in some fashion, and two are still up in the air. So, I mean, life does work its, you know, its way through these things if we just let it do it and stop, don't get in its way or suffer in the meantime.
Right. Well, and I would project that's what makes us religious, right, Phil? Because in order for Phil to be released from this karma of she can fix something, which she can't, then it has to be a non-fixable solution until she surrenders to, I can't fix it. I just give in to life, letting life lead and letting life tell me what is the next thing to do.
Yeah, and that's how I've been operating as best I can, you know, with this. And it alleviates the suffering anyhow. I mean, there's still maybe feelings, emotions, whatever around it, but it does alleviate suffering, because one of these things is something at work, and so many people are involved, and I hear people are just kind of angry, or, you know, they just can't, and they'll even say, oh, I can't move into any place of compassion around this, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just an approach I, you know, doesn't appeal anymore to me.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We lose interest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm so, as always, grateful for practice and have gotten something from every single practice, you know, workshop and call and retreat and everything we've done, and it's just so grateful for all that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We take from everything.
We do.
Everything
yeah.
becomes relevant to how we're suffering and how to end suffering with whatever's up in the moment, right?
Exactly.
The beauty of being a long-time practitioner, because we're always in the process of paying attention and expanding awareness.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just great. So thanks. I'll go now.
Thanks, Phil.
Thank you.
Michael, we only have 3 minutes. Is it a quick one, or shall we do it the next time?
I'll make you quick.
Okay.
And that is, I was thinking about the two bad choices, and I can remember, I think that phrase was first mentioned on a morning radio show a year or two ago, and I can remember exactly where I was when I heard that, and it just landed so deeply, because what I saw was, you know, we talk about dualities, but it's not just A or B, it's bad A or bad B.
Right. It never framed that way, but if you look at it hard, long and hard enough, and reframe the duality in terms of the two bad choices, we can see what's implied but never said.
Yes, and I've just found that so helpful ever since. When I remember that, when I'm caught, when I'm identified between A and B, to remember that it's not just between A and B, it's between bad A and bad B.
Yeah.
And I just find that really
helpful.
Only
solution exits duality.
Yes. Yeah, and neither of which is one I want to choose, and yet I can't seem to get out of it, and hence the suffering. And I'm extraordinarily grateful, like everyone else, for all the conversations tonight and all of the practice opportunities. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, we say it on the show a lot, right, Michael? How did we get so lucky?
Yes. Yes. Thank you, Ashwini.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you, everybody.